to Psy.
Spend the day with Psy.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Radio Psy Thursday Live.
Om Shri Sai Ram. At the very outset, dear listeners, I place my most humble pranams at the voice and listener, the heart and soul of Radio Sai Global Harmony, that is Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba. Today is a holy Thursday, and greetings and a warm welcome to all of you for today's Thursday Live. And this is the segment Morning Glory. I am Raghu from Team Radio Sai. Today is 1st of August 2019 and the time right now in our studio is 9:40 a.m. Indian Standard Time. And just now the Mangalarti concluded in Sai Granth Hall, which is the conclusion of morning bhajan sessions. Before morning bhajan session, there was Vedan session and all this came to you live through Asia stream of Radio Sai Global Harmony. And dear listeners, I hope you all have listened to them. And as I am speaking to you right now, Swami's devotees have lined up in Sai Granth Hall to offer their pranams to Bhagwan. Alright, today is 1st of August, as I told you just now, and just 4 days ago, that is, on 27th of July, was an important day for all of us. Because on 27th of July, 4 years ago, Dr. APJ Abdul Kalam passed away. And today's Morning Glory segment will be dedicated in the memory of Dr. APJ Abdul Kalam. Because in the later half of the segment of Morning Glory, I am going to play for you a recording, a talk by Padma Shri Dr. Professor G. Venkatraman, who was the former director of Radio Sai Global Harmony. And Venkatraman sir himself was a scientist and he got an opportunity to work with Dr. Abdul Kalam. So in the talk, which is very interesting, he will be telling his experiences with Dr. Abdul Kalam. As I said, it's a very interesting and thrilling talk. You all must listen to the talk. But before I play for you the talk, let me speak a little bit about Abdul Kalam. Aul Pakir Jainulabdin Abdul Kalam was an aerospace scientist who served as the 11th President of India from 2002 to 2007. Dr. Abdul Kalam was born on 15th of October 1931 and he was born and raised in Rameshwaram, Tamil Nadu and studied physics and aerospace engineering. He spent the next 4 decades as a scientist and science administrator, mainly at the Defense Research and Development Organization, DRDO, and Indian Space Research Organization, ISRO, and was intimately involved in India's civilian space program and military missile development efforts. He thus came to be known as the Missile Man of India for his work on the development of ballistic missile and launch vehicle technology. He also played a pivotal organizational, technical and political role in India's second Pokhran nuclear tests in 1998. Dr. Kalam was elected as the 11th President of India in 2002 with the support of both the ruling Bharatiya Janata Dal Party and then opposition Indian National Congress. Widely referred to as the People's President, he returned to his civilian life of education, writing and public service after just a single term. He was a recipient of several prestigious awards, including the Bharat Ratna which is India's highest civilian honor. And as we all know, while delivering a lecture at the Indian Institute of Management, Shillong, in Meghalaya, Dr. Kalam collapsed and passed away after an imminent cardiac arrest on 27th July in the year 2015 when he was aged 83. Well, Dr. Kalam has inspired millions of people, and one among them is myself. I also was inspired a lot by Dr. Kalam. In fact, I read a couple of his books. The first book which I read was his autobiography, which is called Wings of Fire, and then The Ignited Minds, and a couple of more books. Now I would like to just share a few of inspiring quotes which Dr. Kalam had told, and which is also my personal best. So the first quote is, quote, "We should not give up and we should not allow the problem to defeat us." Another quote which Dr. Kalam had told was, "Never stop fighting until you arrive at your destined place, that is, the unique you. Have an aim in life, continuously acquire knowledge, work hard, and have perseverance to realize the great life." Another quote which is very nice is, "Look at the sky. We are not alone. The whole universe is friendly to us and conspires only to give the best to those who dream and work." One more very inspiring quote by Dr. Kalam, which I like the most, is, and I quote, "If you want to shine like a sun, first burn like a sun," unquote. Isn't this nice? What does the phrase mean, burn like a sun? It means we should work hard, be patient, and have the quality of perseverance. Then there is one quote which Dr. Kalam used to quote very often. That is, I quote, "Where there is righteousness in the heart, there is beauty in the character. Where there is beauty in the character, there is harmony in the home. Where there is harmony in the home, there is order in the nation. Where there is order in the nation, there is peace in the world." Unquote. Dear listeners, isn't that so nice? And so, in today's Morning Glory segment, I'll be playing for you a talk, which is a tribute to late Dr. Abdul Kalam by Professor G. Venkatraman. Have a listen, please.
Humble pranams at the lotus feet. Loving Sai Ram and greetings from Prashanti Nilayam. It was around 8 o'clock on the evening of Tuesday, 28th of July. That time, I was in conversation with a couple of people who had come from overseas for the Guru Purnima festival that has just ended. And that was when my phone began to ring. And from the phone, I learned that Dr. Kalam had just passed away. I have known Kalam personally for about 30 years. Today, I wish to walk down memory lane and in the process offer my own humble and heartfelt tribute to him. The first time I heard about Kalam was in the year 1980. Kalam's team had just launched successfully a 4-stage rocket that carried as the payload a satellite called Rohini. The launch vehicle itself was called SLV-3, number 3 in the satellite launch vehicle series. It was a 4-stage rocket. Rohini might have been a small token satellite. However, it was also what may be called India's Sputnik moment. For those of you who do not know what the Sputnik is, let me say for the record, Sputnik was a small satellite that the Russians put up in space in the year 1958. I remember that very well. And that launch absolutely mesmerized the people because nobody could believe till then that a man-made object can go around the Earth. It's only the moon that used to do that and still does, by the way. And the Americans were devastated. They thought they were so advanced that they are going to do it first. But here were the Russians who did it. And so it was a big wake-up call and a shock to them. Now, Kalam's success drove India, made India jubilant. People went crazy because SLV-3 was the result of independent work done in India by Indians here, not somewhere else, and for India. The present generation may not be able to appreciate what I am saying, but those of us who lived through the colonial period as well as the transition to independence and some years thereafter, we know how the people in the West used to look upon India. For them, India was just the land of cows, the Taj Mahal, which is a very good plus for us, snake charmers, and the rope trick. The rope trick was very famous in those days. And if you want to know more about it, please go and look up the net. Now, in the midst of all these myths that the Western people had believed in, Kalam was one of the handful of adventurous pioneers who dared to change that image. I shall not go into the details of Kalam's early life because I am sure most of you would have seen it from the net, which has been extremely busy dishing it all out. I shall just add in a few fillers with what I heard from a person who accompanied Dr. Kalam when he made two presidential visits to Prashanthi Nilayam. He made many visits, but of these, two were as the President of India. And this person in Kalam's team told me this personally. And what he said was this. When Kalam was young, he was absolutely fascinated by flying. He has watched birds fly, and his teacher aroused a lot of his curiosity about how do you think the birds fly and so on and so forth. So he wanted to fly. And if you wanted to fly, the way to do it was to join the Indian Air Force as a pilot. Now, in India, they have two military recruiting stations. One is in Khadakwasla, which is near Pune. Now it is called Pune. And there they take high school pass. But if you are a graduate, which Kalam was, he had a degree in aeronautical engineering from the Madras Institute of Technology of those days. And he had to go to Indian Military Academy in Dehradun, which is in the north of India, the foothill of the Himalayas. And he went along with a friend who also was equally ambitious, keen about joining the Indian Air Force. Now, his friend was successful in the physicals. They gave a lot of tests, including physicals. But Kalam failed the physicals. And so, he was not selected. Anyway, they had to return home. And at that time, his friend who was successful said, "Listen, there is a holy place nearby. I think it must have been Rishikesh. There is a sadhu there. I just want to go and offer my pranams to him. Will you come with me?" Kalam said, "Okay." And so they both came to the shrine where the holy man lived. And Kalam told his friend, "You see, I am a Muslim, whereas you are a Hindu. You go in, I'll wait here. Your guru may not like me coming in." The friend went inside and promptly came out and said to Kalam, "Listen, the holy man wants to see you, so you also come in with me." So the two went inside and the holy man smiled and looked at Kalam and said, "Young man, I know you are very disappointed. I know you are very unhappy that you did not get selected to be a pilot. But please do not worry, because destiny has something much bigger for you, not a job as an Air Force pilot." And that made Kalam sort of calm down and in fact be cheerful, because now there is something bigger to look forward. So, after Kalam returned, sometime later, as the Swamiji had predicted, Kalam got drawn to Trivandrum. Why Trivandrum? Because in Trivandrum, there was a small rocket station which had been established much earlier. And the job of this rocket station was to fire small rockets that go into the upper atmosphere. They were doing some studies in the upper atmosphere, and there were technical reasons for doing such studies. So, by the way, that small rocket station at a place called Tumba, near Trivandrum, was established by Dr. Homi Bhabha, the man who launched India into the atomic and the nuclear age. But many people do not know that Bhabha also laid the seeds for India's space program. Anyway, I told you just now that Bhabha laid the seeds for space program, but without thinking too much about it. And he could not devote much attention to it because in 1966, the Air India plane by which he was traveling to Europe hit Mont Blanc in the Alps. All the passengers died. And to this day, people do not know why the crash took place or where the bodies are buried, lying buried in snow. Not a single relic has been found till today. Nobody knows why it happened and where it happened. They all know that it happened. I was then working in India's premier nuclear lab, which had been established by Dr. Bhabha himself. In fact, I may call myself one of the pilgrim pioneers, at least pilgrim youth, because I have moved things to Trombay, Atomic Energy Establishment, Trombay as it was called, from near where Tata Institute now is. I used to work in World War II barracks, naval barracks. That's a long story some other time. So I used to work there, and Bhabha was wearing many hats. He was the chairman of India's Atomic Energy Commission. He was the secretary of the Department of Atomic Energy. He was also director of BARC. And in the midst of all this, he did so many things. Now, the Atomic Energy Commission, which is a sort of policy-making commission, many countries have Atomic Energy Commissions. India also had one. It had three or four members. One was Bhabha, another was Vikram Sarabhai. He was a scientific member. Two other members were from the government. They sort of represented the bureaucracy. And most importantly, there was a finance member. And one of the members was actually a representative of the Prime Minister. It still continues to be. The Prime Minister has a personal stake in atomic energy and today also in the Space Department. So I was then working there. I mean, when the news of Bhabha's sudden death was heard by us, we were all stunned. And they said there is going to be a condolence meeting. It was open-air meeting because there were at least 2,000, 3,000 people who attended that. There were what are called engineering halls. We were seated on the lawn there. And in the opposite building, which was getting constructed, somewhere there in a kind of balcony, stood Dr. Vikram Sarabhai. By this time, he had been designated as the chairman of the Atomic Energy Commission to succeed Bhabha. And he addressed us. I am mentioning this because, remember I told you, atomic energy controlled also space. So the Tumba space station came under Vikram Sarabhai. Now, Dr. Sarabhai was a great visionary. And he was a very humane person also, I should say that, because I had a wonderful opportunity to see him a couple of times. And he was a workaholic. And he would dream big and then try to get people to make those dreams come true. And when I say big, boy, where Atomic Energy Commission was concerned, he really dreamt very big. And I don't have time to tell you about that. But he also began to dream big about space. And that is what gave Kalam the breakthrough opportunity. As I told you, Kalam, thanks to this Sarabhai's deep personal interest in space, Kalam had opportunities to get close to Sarabhai. And I have heard Kalam tell me many stories about that, but I can't go into that now. Kalam came under the spell of Vikram Sarabhai. That was enough. Kalam's rocket rose, if I may put it that way. And from his new boss, Dr. Vikram Sarabhai, Kalam got, let's do it bug. Come on, let's do it. Let's roll up our sleeves and do it. Rest, as they say, is history. To put it simply, Kalam first learnt how to dream and then how to motivate younger colleagues at work to make that dream come true. Kalam was always a team man. He was not a loner. And he learned the art of managing people and bringing them together and making them work harmoniously so that the mission goal is achieved. Mission goal was always important for him. If you look at Kalam's life, in a sense, that has remained the Kalam's signature till the end. He had the ability to transform anything he did into a mission and then plunge into it with passion. He was not just a rocket man or a spaceman or anything like that. Anything he did, he made it into a mission. And that is why he remained in the public eye long after he left Space Department. Now let me come to my own meetings with Kalam. I first saw Kalam in the year 1980. And that was the year the SLV-3 had been successfully launched. And I saw him in Lucknow. Why in Lucknow? Because I'm a fellow of the Indian Academy of Sciences. And every year the Indian Academy meets around November, actually at the time of Raman's birthday, C.V. Raman's birthday. And it meets in different places all over India. That year, Lucknow was the venue. And I remember that meeting very well because at that time the chief minister of UP was Mr. V.P. Singh, who later became the prime minister. And I was astonished to hear that Mr. V.P. Singh studied MSc Physics. And he actually wanted to do relativity and research in that. But by tradition, he belonged to the royal class and his family pushed him into politics. He was very sort of distressed about that. Anyway, Kalam came there as a rock star because, you know, SLV-3 had been launched. And he gave a sort of blazing talk. Everybody was spellbound. And I remember that. In his talk, and this is important, Kalam spoke about the SLV project naturally, and he stressed the fact that complex missions like SLV-3 must first be broken down into small work packages, as he used to refer to them later. Okay, to break a complex job into small work packages, what happens next? That Kalam explained in great detail. I can't go into that. Basically, each work package must be handled by one team. So you'll have many teams working in parallel. Don't many cooks spoil the broth? Not really, if there is tight overall coordination and control. So essentially, Kalam brought out in his talk how project management is done, how people are brought together, how the mission goal must be kept in front of people, how there must be constant supervision, minute to minute. What is failing where? Why are people not coordinating? And so on and so forth. And he also pointed out that one can't get success 100% of the time. And by the way, no country that has gone into space, whether it is America, Russia, Japan, and so on. But 5 or 6 countries have really got an established program in space. Every country has had failures. And you must really learn from failures. Failure is the stepping stone to success. And it's only when you learn carefully by analyzing why the previous time things went wrong that you learn. Even today, America has sometimes has space failures. Because you are trying to do something more difficult, something harder. Okay, now to get back to Kalam, and as I told you, he became a mission man. And he converted everything into a mission throughout his life. Let me now come to my first face-to-face meeting with Kalam. That happened somewhere around 1985. I remember the year, but I can't remember the month or the date. How did this happen? And there's a story there. A few years prior to all this, my boss in atomic energy, my immediate boss, and he was my mentor for all the period that I stayed in atomic energy, Dr. Rajaramanna was his name. He got his PhD in England just after the Second World War, and he worked on fission. Fission is what is responsible for the bomb, atomic bomb, Hiroshima bomb and the Nagasaki bomb. Dr. Ramanna was, for political reasons, shunted out of atomic energy. And that happened because of politics following what India's test nuclear explosion in 1974, May, if I remember correctly. And so, he was thrown off from his first love, atomic energy, and made the chief of the Defense Research Development Organization, called DRDO for short. Now, Ramanna was a strong research man. So when he came to DRDO, he found that many of the labs were headed by regular military fellows with very little research background. See, army often has more brigadiers than they have brigades. So they have to be part and given a job. So they say you become a lab director. So they get a nice bungalow, somebody to look after the garden, somebody to drive the car. They get all the perks, no work, no responsibility. You must know how to salute when the boss comes and all that. Ramanna didn't like all that. He said, come on, man, this is called a research and development organization. That must be the research culture. That was not liked, but he insisted on bringing in some research culture. And then Ramanna was a political hawk, meaning he held firmly to the belief till the very end that if India must defend itself in the ultimate analysis, especially in terms of global politics, it has no friends. The world is always divided into big camps, but we have no friends. We have to defend it ourselves with our own might. And this capability must be developed in the country. On that he was very strong. And so political analysts used to call him a hawk. I didn't see anything wrong with it personally. So Dr. Ramanna said, what is a defense organization if it doesn't have missiles? If somebody attacks us with missiles, we must be able to intercept it. We must be able to threaten them with counter-missile launch so that they are afraid to attack us. As somebody said, our enemies must think twice before they attack us. Unfortunately, every country has enemies. So he said, we must have a missile program. And if you want to have a missile program, you must have a leader. So who is that leader? He looked around and said, Kalam should be the leader. And to cut a long story short, Kalam was the crown jewel of the Indian space program. And the Indian space program was headed at that time by Dr. Satish Dhawan, who was a professional aeronautical engineer who was trained at Caltech in America. Attached to Caltech is the Jet Propulsion Lab, from where the mission to Mars, Pluto, everything is launched. It's the sort of the Mecca for unmanned space research in America. So he said, Kalam is my treasure, I am not going to part with him. Ramanna said, Kalam is more important to the country than your department. So there was a tug of war. Both these people were sort of big shots in their own way. But then Dr. Ramanna had a trump card. He had known Mrs. Indira Gandhi for more than 10 years in connection with Pokhran, and then Mrs. Gandhi went into political oblivion and he used to still retain contact. He had a lot of personal respect for her. And she also had a lot of personal regard for Ramanna. There was a personal, what you call, equation. But now she was the prime minister in 1982 and things like that. And he was the DRDO head. He went and told her, Madam, we need a missile program. We can't start it from a scratch. We need a man who can seed it, lead it, and make it functional. I want Kalam. He is trapped there in space. Can you help me? She simply overnight asked Kalam to go and report to Dr. Ramanna. Of course, Dhawan was bitter about it, but that was the way Kalam came to become what is popularly called in the Western press as a missile man. After he passed away, there were any number of references to the missile man, but not to the human Kalam, that which is a tragedy. I personally find that very disturbing and saddening. Okay, when was the first time I came face to face with Kalam? I had seen him in Lucknow in 1980, but when was the first time I saw him and talked to him? That happened somewhere in the year 1985. So where was I in 1985? I have to go back to a bit of my personal history. I joined the Atomic Energy Establishment, Trombay AET as it was called, in the year 1955. That time AET did not exist except on paper. So some people had to go and colonize a place which was very remote called Trombay in the north of Bombay. And I was at the extreme south of Bombay, near the Bombay Harbour. In fact, the Gateway of India, famous Gateway of India, was very close to the head of the Atomic Energy Commission's office. And I got my salary from a hut which was about something like 50 meters from the Gateway of India. So every month I would go, they will give me 200 rupee notes and 5 10 rupee notes, 250 rupees all told. That was my salary. And the dollar, believe it or not, was 4.78 rupees only. And first thing I would do after getting my salary is to walk to Flora Fountain, which is where I have to go that way to the train station, suburban train station, Churchgate. I will stop at the International Book House and buy a book or two. Those books will be $12. So at 5 rupees, it's only 60 rupees. I collected a lot of books in those days. So I was in the Atomic Energy, and I was one of the so-called founding pioneers. And in the year 1973, Sarabhai, following Baba, had decided to establish a new center in a place near Madras, south of Madras, called the Reactor Research Center. Actually, there is a very interesting story, if I may take a minute. Sarabhai wanted land for space. As far as atomic energy was concerned, atomic power plant, Tamil Nadu government had already given the government of India some space for building two nuclear power stations. They are now called the Madras Atomic Power Station 1 and 2. But at that time, they were under construction. So Sarabhai took a helicopter, went south, and he wanted to locate the space program there. But the Tamil Nadu government would not give much more land. So he flew north and said he found Sriharikota Island, just about as much to the north as Kalpakkam, where the atomic power station is located, was to the south. So he said atomic energy airspace there. Till today, all the big space launches take place from Sriharikota. It's now called Satish Dhawan Space Launch Center. It's named after Satish Dhawan, whom I referred to earlier. So I was asked to go and do the pioneer's job in Kalpakkam. I don't know. They thought I had a long experience and all that. The real reason is nobody was prepared to leave the security and the, what you call the comforts of Bombay and go and live in a godforsaken village. Okay, so there I was in Kalpakkam. And I can't say much about that place, but I was there as a pioneer once more. And this time I could not do research. I had to build a big group and lead them and so on and so forth. Essentially, I had to manage a mission myself. And I did this for about 10 years and I got fed up. I could not do my own research. However, I am proud to say that many of the people I trained achieved much greater famous scientists than I did in my time. In fact, let me take the opportunity to say that very recently, my first PhD student there, he got his PhD from Indian Institute of Science, Professor Ajay Sood, he was recently elected a fellow of the Royal Society of England, of which Newton was once the president, Sir Isaac Newton. And it has a gallery of so many famous scientists with so many discoveries. He is the first Indian to be elected in the last 4 years. And he got elected for his work done in India. And I know him, and he called me immediately, and I was so pleased and thrilled. He comes here, and I expect him to help us a lot with our science programs in the institute. To get back to my frustration at that time, around 1980, I wanted to get away and take some leave of absence and do some research on my own. And Dr. Ramana, my mentor, said, why don't you apply for a Nehru Fellowship? This Nehru Fellowship is offered by the Nehru Foundation, which is established by the Nehru family soon after Nehru died, that is by Indira Gandhi. So I applied. It was a very big honor in those days. And there were two people selected every year. And I got selected, which meant I got a tax-free stipend of some amount, but I won't draw salary from the government. But Ramana said, you stay in the house, you use the library, and do what you want. So I got all the benefits of being in service without getting the salary, and I got the benefit of time from the foundation. And then Ramana himself said, hey, listen, there's a new center coming up in Indore. It's a center for advanced technology being established by the government of India. Can you go and spend some time there every month and help it to move? I readily said yes, because I was clear about one thing. Though the fellowship gave me what you call an independence to engage fully in research, I decided if it is in national interest, I will do it. So every month, I would go from Kalpakkam to Indore by going to Madras Airport, flying to Bombay, and then taking another small flight from Bombay to Indore, which is in central India. And my disappearance every month for 10 days used to be referred to as, this man has gone for playing indoor games. That is a joke. Now, I am mentioning this for a particular reason, because around the year 1985, somewhere, one day, my friend Dr. V.S. Arunachalam phoned me from Delhi. I must give you some background about this V.S. Arunachalam and why was he calling from Delhi. Arunachalam was originally trained in the Department of Atomic Energy. He attended classes where I have taught. We had a training school, AET training school, and he has attended my classes. In a way, he is a very distant relative of mine. And he studied physics, but he joined the metallurgy division of the Atomic Energy Establishment, Trombay, which by this time had been renamed by Indira Gandhi as Bhabha Atomic Research Center. So it used to be called BARC for short, or BARC. He worked for some time in the National Aeronautical Laboratory as a metallurgist, and from there he went to the Defense Metallurgical Research Laboratory, DMRL, in DRDO. And at that time, Ramana was in Delhi. And then, one fine day, Ramana said, I'm going back to atomic energy. That's my favorite place. You come and take over my place. So, till that time, Kalam was reporting to Dr. Ramana. Now he was reporting to Dr. Arunachalam, who was a fellow director in Hyderabad. I am drawing special attention to this because Kalam had national fame. Arunachalam was not an iconic figure in the country. And yet, Kalam, we always spoke in Tamil, he used to refer to him as Thalaivar, meaning leader. And for this part, I must say, Dr. Arunachalam knew Kalam was a treasure, and he went out of the way to give Kalam whatever he wanted. He would cross impossible mountains, open sealed doors. If Kalam wanted it, he must have it. There was what you call a very good equation between them. And for me, it illustrates that Kalam did not have a hang-up about, you know, who is this guy, and all that. That was something remarkable. And I don't think people have paid any attention to this at all. I know this personally. So, Arunachalam calls me, I am in Kalpakkam, I am a Nehru Fellow. By the way, the Nehru Fellowship letter offering me the Nehru Fellowship came from Indira Gandhi herself. She signed it because she was the head of the Nehru Foundation. And it's irony that by the time I had to step down and they said, I thank the foundation, that letter acknowledging it was written by her son, Rajiv Gandhi. So the mother appointed me and I handed over charge to Rajiv Gandhi. Anyway, that is an aside. So Arunachalam calls me from Delhi. I am in Kalpakkam, Nehru Fellow, pick up the phone. We greet. Then he says, listen, Kalam called me and told me he needs you for something. He needs some help. He thinks you can do it for him. I know you are a Nehru Fellow and I know you want to be left alone with your research. But this is Kalam and he is doing a great job for the country. What do you have to say? What could I say? My answer was simple. He said, Dr. Arunachalam, for me the country always comes first. And if Kalam wants me, what greater pleasure can there be? And so I went to Hyderabad and I had my first face-to-face meeting with Dr. Kalam. Actually, his assignment for me was rather small. It involved getting some computers from America, special kind of computers from America. But that was a very, very tricky problem. And it required a lot of tact, finesse, diplomacy, and so on. And he felt that having come from atomic energy, I was better equipped to do that job than his colleagues. He had no hang-up about that. And that is how I came to spend some time with him and doing a job. You see, many people may say, what is the big deal? What are you trying to do? Why did he come and ask you to import computers and all that? That is because in those days, we had a very, very, what I may call, troubled and tense relationship with America, politically that is. America had become very sensitive and would not allow anything to be exported to India which had a so-called dual use. That is to say, it can be used in civilian work, it can be used in a military work. Even if it is a small screw or a simple diode, if it comes under dual use, there is a ban on it. You can't get it, period. The only way you can get it is to say, I've got it now. Then they will try to damage your self-respect by saying, we will give it to you free, how much do you want? Essentially, they will want you to forget developing know-how and be dependent. Then they can call the shots. Today, that has gone down a lot. But still, that kind of tension exists, especially if you have followed the nuclear, India's nuclear deal with America. It exists and it exists where defense is concerned. They are simply like that. There are political reasons and also commercial reasons. So I am here currently in the year 1985. I was enjoying my Nehru Fellowship and I was also helping the Center for Advanced Technology to come up in Indore and laying the foundation for it. Also doing Kalam's work. Kalam's work was done very quickly. It didn't take much time. And by Swami's grace, he got what he wanted. He was very, very happy about it. And in 1987, there came another turn in my life. In the beginning of that year, around the 28th of February, to be exact, by that time my Nehru Fellowship had ended and I had resumed service in the atomic energy. So, during the period I was away formally as a Nehru Fellow, many changes had taken place. And there was a silent understanding between Dr. Ramana and me that at the end of my Nehru Fellowship, I would take charge of the Center for Advanced Technology in Indore. So he issued an order saying, I will assume charge on termination of my fellowship. But on 28th of February, which is the last day of the month, it is now, by the way, observed as National Science Day, I had delivered a lecture on C.V. Raman in Bhopal. and I come back to Bombay. And I was just wondering when I should go to Indore and take charge of the center, which was what was supposed to happen. But there was now a new chairman, Atomic Energy Commission, because Dr. Ramana retired on 28 February. And he said, it is the new man's prerogative to appoint a person to the post, and the old retiring man cannot appoint his favorite and go away. So he sent word, you are not going to Indore, and you are not playing indoor games by joining there as a director. So I didn't know what to do with myself, because there was no place where they could fit me in. My salary was coming in okay, there was no problem. But I was a man drawing salary without a job. So I kept doing certain other things. People said, why don't you go here, why don't you go there and all that. And in the midst of this, in the beginning of 1987, I got a fellowship from the Indian National Science Academy. In fact, three of us. This was for a very specific purpose. And that was to visit a laboratory in Siberia, deep inside the USSR, to learn about the latest in synchrotron radiation technology. There is a big machine called a synchrotron radiation machine. And in fact, while I was in Indore, I had laid the basic plans for building two machines. One, a small one, which would then feed into a bigger machine. And I called them Indus 1 and Indus 2. Because it was in Indore, I said Indus 1, S stands for synchrotron, and Indus 2. And work had started on that. And because of the order, I could not go and join that place. On my way to Russia, I stopped in Delhi for a day. It was the end of March. Arunachalam, I went to see him. He was at his home. It was all holiday. He said, where are you going? He said, I'm going to USSR. Those days it was USSR. Where are you going? I'm going to some place where synchrotron radiation work is done. He said, why are you wasting your time there? You come and work for us. I said, doing what? Well, I want you to come here, and like Kalam, I want you to start something new. What is that? Parallel computers. And they said, let me think about it. And I mentioned this because once it became clear that I was finding it difficult to hang around in atomic energy without any serious work, I told Arunachalam, listen, I take your offer. And Ramana accepted it. By the way, he had retired, of course, but I still continue to regard him as my mentor. Just for the record, let me mention, much later, my so-called student, a very brilliant fellow called Dr. Vinod Sani, he became the director. And till that time, the synchrotron project was limping. And he made it work. And by this time, the government has renamed this the indoor center as Raja Ramanna Center for Advanced Technology, recognizing Ramanna's contribution. So I was so happy that my student made Indus 1 and Indus 2 work. Nobody said it is going to work. He made it work. And he was also a chela of Dr. Ramanna, as I was. And to our great satisfaction, it has been named the Raja Ramanna Center. Okay, what about me? I went in the end of December, towards the middle of December, to Hyderabad, along with my colleague, Dr. Neelakantan, who was with me for many years. He said, we will both start this new laboratory for building parallel computers. Now, one thing that happens in defense is, every laboratory is called defense, this laboratory, defense, that. It is like advertising, I am doing defense work. And mine was a very sensitive. So I invented an acronym, and it ended up as the word Anurag. So I said, my lab is going to be called Anurag. Everybody wondered what Anurag was. Many people thought I had built a house and called it Anurag. Nowadays, people refer to Anurag project. Anurag was actually a quiet laboratory, and our job was to build a supercomputer using the parallel computer technology. So there I was in December 1987 as director of one of the labs in Hyderabad. There are three major labs at that time. Mine was the fourth. It had only two people. The others had 1,000 people and so on. So I didn't have a parking place. And Dr. Kalam became my landlord, so to say. That is the sort of lighter side. But all this is a prelude to saying that something happened on May 2nd, 2nd May, 1988. And that day is a very important day for me in my life, because on that day, my 18-year-old son suddenly passed away under very tragic circumstances. I was, of course, stunned. My wife was totally shattered, because this boy was our only child. He was born late in marriage, and he was 18 years. So we didn't know what to do. The ladies took her away and they tried to comfort. It is as the Emperor of Japan said after Hiroshima, trying to bear the unbearable. But I was cool on one side, because I'm always a very practical kind of guy. So I had to make all the phone calls to various relatives and this and that, so forth. But there was a young boy who has lost his life, and so many things had to be done. All the directors rushed, and Dr. Kalam was there. I tell you, he took full charge, because he had a lot of military officers under him. Whatever you may say, they take orders and then they do the job. We had to get a priest. They had to get doctors to remove the cornea or whatever it is they take out from the eyes. Then they had to get a van, they had to arrange a crematorium, they had to get a death certificate, this, blah, 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 so many things. He arranged, his people did everything. And I didn't know what was going on. But I remember Kalam that day. And for the record, I must say, Dr. Arunachalam from Delhi, whom I know, he was also shocked, and he made several phone calls to various people to give me all the help. But above all stands Kalam, who took charge of so many things that day as a personal friend. And I shall ever remember the help he gave on that particular day. And it was wonderful support. And I shall ever remain indebted to him for his assistance and help and consolation in my hour of deepest shock. Well, I have known Kalam for 30 years, and obviously there must be any number of personal reflections. I can't go over them, all of them. So let me be very selective and make a brief reference to just a few of them, starting with Kalam's first visit to this place as the President of India. Kalam had come here a few times earlier, but I can't cover it now. Now, this first visit of Kalam as the President of India is a very interesting story, and there are aspects to it which you may not know of. For the record, Kalam was sworn in. The elections took place in the month of July of 2002. In fact, Kalam came here to seek Swami's blessings. That's an interesting story, but I can't go into that. And from here, he went to Delhi. The presidential election was conducted. The Ministry of Home Affairs announced the results, and Kalam was declared as the president-elect, and he took office on the 28th of July, 2002. Because it was on that day, the 10th President of India demitted office. So Kalam became the 11th President of India on 28th July. Now, by this time, I had stepped down as the Vice Chancellor here. And Mr. Giri became the Vice Chancellor. And he had already written a letter to Dr. Kalam, asking him whether he would come as the chief guest for the convocation of that year, 2002. Kalam accepted. So, now, of course, obviously, Swami had given that instruction to Mr. Giri, otherwise these things don't happen. Around the end of September, Swami called me and said, "Listen, you know Kalam, and we have to go and personally invite the president. So I give that job to you." He has agreed to give an appointment day. You must go on that particular day. So be ready to travel to Delhi at short notice. And a few days later, the word came that the president would see me at 12 o'clock on October 9th. So on October 6th, Swami calls me for interview to give a last minute instructions. He said, "Swami, today is my 70th birthday. Can I do Pada Namaskar?" He said, "Tisko." Then as I was doing, I didn't ask him or anything because I couldn't even dream of it. He just put his hand on my head and started chanting the ancient Vedic prayer, Satamanam Bhavati and all that. I was just deeply moved. Then he became very practical. "Now you go, car waiting for you. Don't stay in any place, in anybody's house. Here is some cash. Hire a taxi, go to a hotel. And two things. You are going to see the president, so wear shoes, suit, everything. He may be your friend. Secondly, you tell him when he comes here, you should not come in a blue shirt. He must come in a formal dress." So there were two strict instructions. He said, "Yes, Swami." And then left. I didn't have shoes. They had gone off somewhere. This is 2002 and I came in 1993. So I didn't have even walking shoes, nothing. And as for slippers, I stopped wearing them because they would disappear. And I was a pensioner. I used to say, I can't afford replacing slippers. So I was more or less a shoeless man. So I had to stop in Bangalore and buy a pair of shoes and socks. So October 7th morning, I took my carry-on bag, in which there was only old suit that I had at that time. Subsequently, I got many as a result of convocations. I left Bangalore, arrived at the airport, and I took a prepaid taxi to go to the Sai International Center, which was not very far from the airport. Why Sai International Center? Because I had to change into a suit. And General Chibber was the head of that institution. He was sort of looking after it. I went there. He was there waiting for me. He gave me some coffee, tea or something. I quickly changed into a suit, wore a shoe and all that. And Mr. Giri, very thoughtfully, had arranged for a car, government car, to take me to the Rashtrapati Bhavan and all that. This car number has already been registered with the security in Rashtrapati Bhavan. And so, from the Sai International Center, I go to the Rashtrapati Bhavan. It's about something like 11:30 or so. Once they see the car, they wave me in. I was very surprised. There's no security. The Rashtrapati Bhavan, as it is called, used to be called the Viceregal Palace in the old days. In fact, it was built when New Delhi was being built, and it was built in a manner that it would project the grandeur and the might of the British Empire. Viceregal Palace, that's how it was called. And it's sure a very big, impressive building because it housed the Viceroy. Viceroy means one who is in representing the Roy, king. And in fact, when Gandhi went to see some Viceroy or the other, the walking stick, Churchill was very upset and he made some disparaging remarks about a fakir going to the Viceregal Palace and all that. That's an unfortunate part of history. But anyway, I had been there once. That was when I got my Padma Shri Award. And I've seen it's huge, magnificent and all that. And somewhere in those 600 rooms was President Kalam. Somebody was waiting for me in the steps and he took me straight to the room where people wait for Kalam. And whom do I find there? I find Mr. Sheridan, who had been with Kalam earlier. And he's from Tirunelveli. So he speaks Tamil. So I also spoke Tamil to him. And he said, "President is now busy. He will call you in shortly. So here are so many things to eat. If you want, you can eat them. I looked at them. They were all mighty inviting, but I was very careful with my food. So I said, no thanks. Can you give me a glass of water? And then I didn't have to wait too long. And sir, president will now see you. Sheridan said that. So he took me and walked me. It was a long walk. Finally, I entered a room. It was not very big, nor was it small. And one side was the wall. And at the corner of the room, there was a huge French window, meaning it was glass from ceiling to floor. And in that corner, there was a small table. And Kalam was sitting there, of course, in his blue shirt. And he said, Vanga sir, come in, and all that. And as soon as I came nearby, he looked at me from top to bottom and asked me in Tamil, what's all this? You're suited and booted. And I said, sir, these are my boss's orders. He said, you're seeing the president of India, not your old buddy. And then he said, sit down, and all that. So as I sat down, I looked at the table and all the books there. They were all rulings of the Lok Sabha speaker, rulings of the chairman of Rajya Sabha, Supreme Court judgments, this, that, all connected with president's job. And on top of that, in one corner, I found there was Rajaji's Ramayana. I was very deeply moved and impressed. I said, okay, God, Dharma is safe with our president, at least this president. And I sat down, Kalam smiled and said, you see there, outside the window, there are lots of birds and bird feed has been put there. These are my friends. I don't feel lonely when I watch them. And in this job, you can get lonely at times. So afterwards he said, he has come to our institute before, but he bowled a googly. He is used to doing that. I read it anyway. He said, give me good reason why I should come to your university. Tell me about your university. He has already accepted coming here. He was sort of testing me. So I started seeing something about our Swami's institute, university. Suddenly he said, stop. I want to take notes for my convocation address. So that went. Then afterwards, he said, I have to go now, but you come with me. So I went with him. Rashtrapati Bhavan being huge, we went for a walk, so to say. Kalam knew his way. And we ended up in a large hall, which was a place which looked like where there could be gatherings of 200 to 300 people. And there, sitting on chairs, were students. Kalam had arranged that meeting. So he talked to them for a few minutes about this and that. And then he said, introduce me. He's flattered me, no end. He's a great scientist and all that. And then suddenly he said, this man is from Puttaparthi. What is Puttaparthi famous for? Satya Sai Baba. What is Satya Sai Baba famous for? Something, they said. I was stunned. How did these fellows know all these things? Later on I discovered they were from the model school in Vishakhapatnam. So after that he engaged them in all kinds of small talk, then tried to arouse them, this thing, he allowed them to ask questions and so on. That went off like a charm and time flew. Then he said, children, I'm so happy you came here. Unfortunately, I've got other work to do. And I know you're all hungry. You go there to that room. Somebody will take you. Lot of food laid out for you. Eat all that you want. Go home happy. Then he told me, look, I've got some parliamentary work. So Sheridan will take you and you wait there. And I will meet again. And you have lunch with me before you go. So I went to Sheridan's room and I parked myself there. So after Kalam dropped me in Sheridan's office, Sheridan said, please sit here. The president will call you again and you will have lunch with him. So I sat there. That wait proved to be long. Sheridan tried to distract me by offering me food to eat. You know, I was supposed to eat lunch. Then what will I do there? So very wisely I ordered this. Then he said, sir, you can read all these things. There are a lot of reading material. I had already gone through them about 4 or 5 times. So I was always looking at my watch. I have to go to the airport and report at that time. I have to be on that flight to Bangalore that evening. Otherwise, my head will be cut off. Okay? And this man had disappeared. So I asked Sheridan, is the parliamentary work over? Yes, sir, that's over. But then where is the president? He's busy with the school children who have come from Kashi, Varanasi. So my BP was going up, the clock was moving. Suddenly Kalam said, you can come. So Sheridan took me back to where Kalam was and he said, come, I will show you my room. My heart stopped palpitating. I walked with him. It was a long walk. At the end of it, I came to a place where Kalam lived. Just two rooms. He said, sir, this is the room where I have my books. I read and occasionally watch TV. And then he showed, this is my bedroom. These are the only two rooms I occupy. When he made that statement, I was reminded of two things. The first thing is, the first Indian to occupy the Rashtrapati Bhavan, Vicegerent Lodge as it used to be called in those days, was Mr. C. Rajagopalachari, the first and the only Indian to be the Governor General. He was actually a freedom fighter and he had gone to jail a few times. He was the Indian who replaced Lord Mountbatten as the Governor General of Free India. And he too used only two rooms. By the way, Rajaji, as he was known, was a very pious and also Spartan man. And he was related to Gandhiji in the sense that Rajaji's daughter married Gandhiji's second son, Devdas Gandhi, who was the editor of the Hindustan Times for a long time. Rajaji has written the Mahabharata and also the Ramayana, which I found on the president's desk. Now, this Rajaji also used two rooms. Second point is Kalam. Kalam in Hyderabad could have used a big bungalow. They have director's bungalow. Kalam was a director of two huge laboratories. But you know what he occupied? The old guest house, which I've been in once, had flatlets. They had only four flats. That was inadequate, so they built more. Another guest house, which I occupied much later, many times. This guest house had six flats. And in those flats, there were two rooms and a bathroom. And Kalam had an upstairs flatlet. I've been there many times while in Hyderabad, and he was in Hyderabad. They had two rooms. One room, books, table, Veena. I don't think there was a TV because he was not very much bothered. Other room is his bedroom. That's all. There will be some security guard outside. So, that was the signature of Kalam. Even his, what you call, luxury was available. In Hyderabad, he had a big, all directors occupied a big bungalow. There was a bungalow for him. He refused to occupy it. It was too big. Who the hell will go on from here to there? And that was his signature towards then. He lived a simple Spartan life. He was made that way. Very few people recognized it. So, Kalam took me on a long walk. I had seen the bedroom and all that. He said, now come, let us go and have lunch. We had to go to the upstairs. And there was a spacious area. And there was a kitchen. Because sometimes, you know, you may have 10 guests, 20 guests. Long table was there and there was a nice lookout. But it was secluded and you could see trees only on the other side. So we all sat down for lunch. Who? Myself, Kalam and Sheridan. He was a Christian, Kalam was a Muslim and I was supposed to be Hindu. And Kalam being a lifelong vegetarian, he ordered only vegetarian food. Okay, that was no surprise. What happened was, he suddenly said, you eat this. This is good for you. It happened to be bitter gourd, and I hated bitter gourd. But when the president says you eat it, you jolly well eat it. You don't ask questions. Anyway, I was happy because my time of release was coming. And at the end, we shook hands. And then Kalam went his way, and Sheridan escorted me to his room. where I pick up a few things and go. And before that, just before I shook hands and took leave of Sheridan and said, look, your boss make sure you pack his formal dress into his luggage. Otherwise, he'll come here at Parthi for convocation in blue dress, and that will be disaster for me. Sheridan laughed, don't worry, I'll take care of it. So I rushed to Sai International Center, tore off my suit and boot, put them in the bag, and wore my normal dress, got into the plane, came to Bangalore. 2 o'clock in the morning I woke up, came here at 5 o'clock. Swami Rajendran, the car was there. I promptly shaved and had a bath and all that, and was sitting there for darshan. Swami came, had a look around, gave darshan, called and said, hey Mahindi, what happened? I gave him a thumbnail account and I said, Swami, I did not spend much money. And the president gave me a free lunch. I returned the money. He was surprised. So, that is how the invitation saga ended. Maybe I should now tell you about the convocation. I will not say much. It was, I think, Swami's 77th birthday, if I remember correct. And it also happened to be Radio Sai's first birthday, because Radio Sai was inaugurated on Swami's 76th birthday. So it was our first birthday, we should have had a big cake and all that. There was no opportunity for that. Why? Because we had decided to go live from Prashanthi Nilayam. And that called for a lot of strategy, because those days we used to broadcast using the World Space Asia Star satellite. That satellite had to be linked. First of all, we had to have direct link to Asia Star. So we had to put up a satellite dish on top of the mandir. And we had to make sure the monkeys don't disturb it. I suppose there is a photograph somewhere. It was just opposite East Prashanthi. And somewhere on that mandir terrace, we were looking at Asia Star. And then that Asia Star was linked to communication satellites. And that finally went to Melbourne. So it was live relay. We broadcast the convocation live. And President Kalam came in his formal dress and wore a gown. And Mr. Giri led the procession along with Kalam. And Swami came in. It was a very grand affair. In those days, the convocation had just moved to Sai Kulwant Hall. Well, the convocation drama continued to be in Purnachandra Hall. It's not so now. And so there was a 1 hour gap between end of convocation and beginning of drama. So Kalam went to his guest house here in Srinivasa guest house and promptly tore off all his official dress and came to the convocation drama in blue shirt. No problem there. That was only a sort of informal thing. Next morning he had to leave early. So he had already told Swami, Swami, I'll be quietly leaving. I'll sit separately from your VIP guests and grant me permission. Swami said, yes, I understand. So Kalam was his blue shirt, socks, and he sat on the pillar. It is just adjacent to where Dr. Safaya used to sit. And he was facing the interview room door. When the time came, he quietly got up and entered the mandir, quite close to where Swami's chair is. And there we were, broadcasting live the birthday proceedings. And when he came there, I shook hands with Kalam, but he ignored me because he was stunned by the fellows we saw there. All of them were his buddies from ISRO. See, when the ISRO program began to become weak, many of them went and joined World Space. So he asked, Venugopal, what are you doing here? So what are you doing here? So he was so happy, and he went out the door, and that was the end of the famous 2002 Congress, this season. He came again in 2006. This time, Mr. Gokak was the Vice Chancellor. And the only thing I would like to say about that convocation on that occasion is, at the end of the convocation, Mr. Giri and I decided to call on Kalam privately, which we did. And when we did so, Kalam, we were alone. Kalam said to us, the Prime Minister and I are very concerned about Baba's health. We are very worried. Prime Minister at that time was Dr. Manmohan Singh. Is there anything we can do? We are ready to do anything. We are ready to bring any doctor from anywhere. If he wants it here, we'll bring it here. If he agrees, we can take him to the best hospital in the world. Can you get me his reaction? So next morning, it was Swami's birthday, and Kalam was supposed to be present this time in formal dress and all that. Somehow we had to communicate to Kalam and first communicate this to what Swami's reaction was. Normally, on birthdays, I don't go to Yajurmandir. But that day I went. And Giri was also there. We were waiting downstairs for Swami to come. We managed, Mr. Giri and I managed to attract Bhagwan's attention for just a few seconds. We whispered, "Swami, we have a small submission to make." He said, "Amy, what is it?" And we conveyed the anxiety of the President and the Prime Minister about Swami. Swami just smiled and said, "Kalam is a good man. Tell him Swami blesses him and that Swami can take care of himself," more or less. I think my narration should end here, but before that I just remembered something that happened when Kalam came the first time as the President. After the convocation, Swami gave Kalam an interview because, you know, people disperse to change dress and all that. Swami called in Kalam and said, "I want to talk to you for a few minutes." Usual thing. And they were alone. People had dispersed because they were getting busy to go to the drama. Kalam sat on the floor. There was the President of India, 11th President, just like any devotee does. Swami was in his chair. And suddenly, Kalam pulled out of his pocket an envelope and gave it to Swami. Swami asked him, "What is it?" And Kalam said, Swami personally told this a few days later. That's how I know. I don't think he told it to others because he knew of my long association with Kalam. He said, "Baba, my father and mother are gone. You are my father and mother. So in this cover, I put the first 2 months' salary as President. Instead of giving it to my father and mother, I am now giving it to you because you are the father and mother, my father and mother." And Swami, when he narrated this, see what kind of a noble man he is. This is not well known. There is another aspect of Kalam which I should draw your attention to. This was during his first visit. And during that first visit, after the convocation drama was over, Kalam went back to the guest house, Srinivasa guest house. He had his dinner. Sometime later, as he often does in other places, he just took a few friends of his and went for a stroll. Of course, there was security was busy eating or something like that. And nobody can predict what he does. So there was hardly any security. He just walked around chatting with the devotees here and there. And they were all stunned to see the President of India coolly walking around the campus, Ashram campus. That was his informality. And there is, yes, one more thing, personal. This happened during the time I was the Vice Chancellor. I attained the age of 65. And I could not complete a full 3-year term. And I had to step down and make way for the next man who happened to be Giri. During that period, one day around 8 o'clock at night, I got a phone call. It was Kalam speaking. He had not yet become the President, remember. And because it is in the 90s. In fact, he was still in DRDO as the chief of DRDO. He called me and told me, he spoke in Tamil. And he said, "I have been given the Bharat Ratna. And I am allowed 2 guests. I knew that in the sense that when I got my Padma Shri in 1990, I was allowed 2 guests. I took my sister and her husband, chose them to be the 2 guests. They came independently, sat independently and all that. So there is a protocol. And I realized with a shock that even the Bharat Ratna was allowed only 2 guests. And Kalam said, one of the guests I invited, my brother from Rameshwaram, I want you to be the other guest. I just collapsed. In this whole country with 1 billion people, he picks me. Then I had to plead with him for 1 hour. Sir, I am Swami's vice chancellor. I cannot go and ask him any questions like this. And he finally got convinced that I just have to stay here and do my duty. And he was very generous to me. But I cannot forget the fact that out of all the people in the world, and it also shows how, as Swami's vice chancellor, he demands total commitment. And that is what I think earned me an opportunity to be in Swami's good books till the end. Because I said unhesitatingly, nothing is allowed to come between me and Swami, whatever it may be. And that is something Swami expects, but he does not tell you. And I could read the signals well, and I received abundant grace from Swami. I told you earlier that Kalam was a mission manager. As that thought came to me, as I was preparing for this talk, I realized Swami was the ultimate mission manager. He managed more missions than you and I can imagine. And he did so quietly. It was layer upon layer upon layer. Some were very big, some were small, but he knew how to manage them all without losing his cool and getting the job done. In a sense, if you look back at Kalam's life, he made everything he did into a mission. For example, when he went to the Rashtrapati Bhavan, he made talking to students his mission, elevating them, making them enthusiastic and so on. He said, decided that during my term, I shall see 5 lakh or 500,000 children, something like that, set a target. The hardcore, what I would call prosaic and worldly kind of fellows have no patience for this. If you don't generate controversy, you are not news. Kalam was consistently ignored by the national press. But I know for a fact how many people were enthused, children were enthused. In fact, Kalam told once, he went to a place and he said, you must do this, do this, do this. When you grow up. One boy got up, he said, what? My father is a farmer. Don't you think farming is important for this country? Who will feed the people if everybody becomes doctor, soldier, and engineer? He said, you have taught me a lesson today. He had the humility to accept that. And that was his greatness. Simplicity and sincerity. There may be many people like that. But I don't think any one of them has gone from missiles to being president to being a teacher. I heard that during his last trip to Shillong, in the car, his friend was asking him, what do you think you should be remembered as? So he said, what do you think? Kalam said. That man gave a long list. He said, no. I like to be remembered as a teacher. And teach he did, which is values. For the record, I should mention, and this here I shall definitely stop. At the time, Swami was in the hospital. He phoned me, Kalam. Swami had just entered the hospital a few days earlier. He said, I was in Radio Sai office, he picked up. He was now the former president. He said, I am coming to Madras. Can I come and sit Swami in the hospital? I said, sir, he is in the ICU. Even doctor's admission to that is very restricted. It may be difficult now. He said, that's okay. I will come and see him when he is discharged from the hospital. He was sort of feeling that way. In fact, I honestly believed till the last minute that Swami was just putting the fear of God into us by going through all those medical traumas. And He will come back and tell us, "You do not know who I am. You have no idea of how rare avatars are, bluest of blue moons, and you are not taking advantage of divine presence. You are not paying heed to divine teachings." That's the way I thought. But it was not so. 2 days before Mahasamadhi, at a time when the press was writing all sorts of nonsense, most particularly the foreign press, I won't go into that sad story, Kalam was the sole exception to give a statement to the Hindustan Times. It appeared in the e-version of the Hindustan Times, praising Baba as for his extraordinary contribution to the nation and to humanity. This is before Mahasamadhi. But then, only God knows His own master plans. He withdrew, leaving us to carry on His mission, which we try to do in our own ways as effectively as possible. But till the end, Kalam remained very, very conscious of Baba's contribution. Oh yes, my last meeting with Kalam. That happened sometime earlier this year, a few months ago. Kalam had come with the Chief Minister Chandrababu Naidu by a plane from Hyderabad, which landed in Puttaparthi Airport. About 4 of us went from here to receive Kalam, and the Chief Minister, of course. And he had his lunch in Puttaparthi Airport. And I happened to be sitting next to Kalam. And the idea was that they will fly by helicopter to a village where there was an engagement of Chandrababu Naidu and Kalam. And he told me, "On my way back, I would like to visit the Samadhi and also Mr. Giri." But he came back late. And Puttaparthi Airport, there's a restriction. Before the sun sets, you must take off the plane. So he could not come here. But Mr. Giri, when I told him this, he was sort of sharp enough to say, "I will go to the airport to see Kalam." So he went there. Kalam was very happy. But he could not come to Samadhi. Now, of course, he has passed into history. And it is time that people remember him for what he was. There are many, many things I have left out, obviously. They cannot all be said within the space of a short talk. It's not really short, it's quite long. But I do feel I would like to remember him, not only as a teacher, but as a good, humane human being, the like of which don't come often. Thank you all for your patience. God bless. Jai Sai Ram.
కుల్ఫీ పల్కే గాని నీటు మాటల కోటి నేరడి తడు మనసిచ్చితను ప్రేమ మాటలాడుని కాని పూర్తి మాటలు పలుకడెప్పుడు పూర్తి మాటలు పలుకడెప్పుడు ఆపస్తంభ సూత్రము భారద్వాజ సగోత్రము కనయదార్తట తాను తప్పగ చనుగాని తప్పుల బాబాయందలేడు కల్ల కపటాలు తెలియని అందరి వాడు ఎల్ల జీవుల తనవలేంచువాడు కల్ల కపటాలు తెలియని అందరి వాడు ఎల్ల జీవుల తనవలేంచువాడు
భారత్వా सोहम सोहम ध्यान करो ध्यान करो
सद्गुरु साईं ध्यान करो
सद्गुरु साईं ध्यान करो
सद्गुरु साईं ध्यान करो
सोहम सोहम ध्यान करो करो
सोहम सोहम ध्यान करो
सद्गुरु साई ध्यान करो
सद्गुरु साई ध्यान करो
सोहम सोहम ध्यान करो सोहम ब्रह्मा सोहम विष्णु
सोहम ब्रह्मा सोहम विष्णु
सोहम साई ध्यान करो
सोहम साई ध्यान करो
सोहम आत्मा शिव परमात्मा
हृदय भरो
सोहम
सो
a single story of His infinite glory, captured through divine discourses, music, bhajans, and through Vedas, talk shows, interviews, panel discussion, and study circles. All brought to you live from the epicenter of our times, Prashanthi Nilayam, India. Radio Sai Thursday Live.